swing and a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss! Strike three, it's over!
The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Test. It is episode 128. If you're listening on drop day, September 12th, this is the official podcast of Room Service Cheese Fingers and Fries, which is what I'm eating as we're recording this, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going, remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, rate us 5 stars, do it in multiple places because we really appreciate it, and it helps you out a ton to subscribe and get those notifications when episodes drop. You can also check us out on WEI on YouTube on the WEI page. We've got the Play Tessie playlist there. Remember, hit the thumbs up on those videos, comment, everything. And as always, find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Here with Sammy and here with Pat. Coming off, I would say, a roller coaster of emotion of a series, which honestly, every series at this point is when you're basically on the precipice of death. In every single game, it feels like if you lose, your season's going to be over. But in the end, the Red Sox take 2 out of 3 from the team that, coming into the season, I had as the best team in the AL. I don't know if they're that now, but they're certainly a contender for it. The two wins were incredibly fun, 12-3, in an offensive outburst that we just haven't seen in a long time. And then, of course, in the final game, Tyler O'Neill hitting an 8-million-foot moon bomb to walk it off. And it's one of the ones where it's not like it was tied and he walks off. They were losing and he walked it off. And to me, those ones are way cooler. But let's for purposes of where we are today, that third game, if they lost that game, they're 5 out. And if you're 5 out in the middle of September, on drop day, it's September 12th. If you're 5 out with Detroit in front of you as well, and they're still in front of you right now, if you're 5 out in that spot, like, you're kind of Dunsky. And we've been kind of dancing around the line of calling this team Dunsky for a little while, but it feels like that's kind of a constantly moving goalpost because we've kind of been talking like they're dumb. But at the same time, after game one of the series, they were just 3 games out. And it's like, if they just beaten the White Sox in that game, they'd be 2 games out. But alas, right now it's 4. I certainly wouldn't say, because the season is not over, I wouldn't say they're necessarily in contention. I don't know. Maybe you guys would clap back at me for that. I still, 4 games out with this little time left, I would not say that that is truly in contention. But that said, they are playing meaningful September baseball, which I feel like we need to take a step back and appreciate the fact that we are basically in mid-September right now and the games still matter. Even if they feel like they're on the precipice of death, the games have mattered from start to now, which is something that I don't think any of us would have expected at the beginning of the season. But I mean, God, they won the series against Baltimore. Just keep winning ball games and let the chips fall where they may. But I want to go back and ask you guys a question. Do you either want to push back that even though the games matter, the Sox are not truly in contention 4 games out at this point in the season?
Nah, I mean, you can't say they're not in contention. They're still in striking distance. I think if you're saying they're not in contention, then you think the season's over. And like, I won't do a semantics, you know, debate.
I think there's two different things. I think season over means you can't get back into contention. I think being out of contention, you can get back into contention. But if season's over, you can't.
Okay, so you're using not in contention. I'm not accusing you of fence sitting, but not in contention is like you're not dead yet, but you're not close to being alive, I guess. Kind of something. Let me tell you, both of you, I had my hand over the red button. Tonight was going to be the night. If they had lost this game with Minnesota winning, Detroit winning, Kansas City, TBD, they're still playing as we record. It's still almost 10:30 on Wednesday night as we record, but we'll see what happens with that. Point being, had my hand over the button. I was going to come on here and say that they're dead, season over, but they won. Tyler O'Neill with his glorious Canadian biceps sent that ball to like New Hampshire or Vermont. It's probably still flying. Unbelievable, man. Like you said, Gordo, wave of emotions. I feel like I'm just excited to watch meaningful Red Sox baseball for one more day.
Yeah. Look, I'll be transparent. 30 seconds before Tyler O'Neill hit the home run, I said in the group chat, and I quote, "We may be staring down the barrel of a death declared episode." And then Tyler O'Neill, this is what Tyler O'Neill does, and he hits a home run about 1,000 feet. I have to look up the Statcast tomorrow, get the true number on it. I think it was 1,000. I'm going to run with that. And then just like that, I'm back in. I'm not saying they're by any means going to get the wild card.
Breaking news. Royals have lost to the Yankees. Shout out to this hurts to say. Shout out to the Yankees. Thank you for winning that game for the Red Sox.
So what, Sammy? What does that put the Red Sox behind the Royals right now, though?
Oh,
like are we still?
I know that off the top of my head.
Five and a half?
Does it still make sense to watch them? Five. Yeah, 5.5's a lot. They don't play like the reason you can watch the Twins is because they play the Twins.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's just kind of like an added bonus, like on the off chance that you catch the Royals. But, you know, not a big deal. Yeah. Either way, the big team, like you said, is the Twins because you got the 3 head to head. That series is going to be grueling to watch. Like, just the nerves are going to be through the roof. But that's what we all wanted. We all wanted this in the offseason. We're saying meaningful games and, like, assuming this Yankees series doesn't go completely disastrous, which we'll preview that in a minute. Sounds like we're going to get that big end of the season series. And oh boy, I'm excited for it.
Yeah, you just got to hope. Like you want to get into that series because if you sweep, you get the tiebreaker. So you want to get into that series 3 games back of the Twins. And that series starts on Friday of next week. What day is it today? Yeah. I lose track of the days.
Today's Wednesday. Today, you have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday is the Yankees. Then you have team that escapes me, and then Twins.
It must the be the Rays. They play the Rays. A shit ton.
Oh, God.
It's Rays. I'm gonna
take a stab at Rays. It being the Rays.
Okay. Yeah, it's the Rays. It's the Rays. Oh, God. So, like, I hate that for some reason.
Well, yeah, no. The Rays, it's just doesn't matter if they're good or bad. They're going to give you fits. Doesn't mean you can't beat them, but you just got to get to that twin series within 3 games. And ideally, the Tigers lose some games you can get in front of them, too. Because what would be more annoying than the Red Sox passing the Twins, but then not getting the wild card because, like, the freaking Tigers did it? Like, no, how awful would that
biggest kick? I would rather be out of contention right now. Straight up. I don't want to lose out to the Tigers.
You know what sucks is, like, I feel like nobody wants to see that nationally. If the Tigers made it, everyone would be like, terrible. Oh, the Tigers? Like, we got to do Detroit play, like Fenway playoffs, even if the Red Sox aren't expected to do much. That's electric. Detroit? Yeah. No, thank you, nerds.
Detroit sneaks in and just gets absolutely fucked by the Astros. Like, that's not entertaining.
They sold, too. It's like, it's not even like they went for it and, like, it's a cool... Like, they sold. They didn't even try, but... Regardless, like I do want to take a step back because I feel like we weirdly like haven't done necessarily a good enough job about it lately. I feel like we've been so emotional about where the team is in terms of taking steps back in the wild card, getting the 5, are they dead, are they not dead, that we haven't taken enough time to appreciate the fact that this team was supposed to be a last place team, sell at the deadline, like season over by the around the midway point. This is a team that's in contention or on the border of contention, however you want to put it, in September. We did not expect it. And like organizationally, they're taking such a step forward this year, not just at the big league level. Obviously, we've seen a bunch of guys do that. But at the minor league level, I mean, talk about Roman Anthony becoming the number one prospect in baseball on Baseball America, who has 4 Red Sox in the top 25. I believe it's Roman Anthony, number 1, Marcelo Meyer, number 10, Christian Campbell, number 24, who, by the way, wasn't even in the Red Sox top 30 coming into the season, and then Kyle Teal at 25. So organizationally, having a couple of pitchers that maybe you can count on in the future. I know Luis Perales got Tommy John, but he's taken a step forward. Quinn Priester you acquire, and he's looked really good, especially with the swing and miss stuff lately in AAA. How much better do you guys feel organizationally now for the future? Because I felt pretty good about the future coming into the season still, but I feel way better today not just for based off of what we've seen on the field at the big league level, which has been considerably better this year than we thought. But I mean, you had guys in the minors that we thought were good prospects. I don't know if any of us had Roman Anthony becoming the number one prospect in baseball this year on our bingo cards. I don't know. You tell me.
No way. Well, there's two ways to kind of feel better about it. Philosophy wise, I feel way better, way, way, way better with Andrew Bailey and his cohort of pitching experts in-house, as well as, you know, Kyle Boddy, Willard, Craig Breslow, even though the results haven't been great of the guys he's acquired, I'm sure that'll turn around. So I feel much better in terms of philosophy, pitching-wise, hitting-wise. The Red Sox have always been a machine churning out bats, so that doesn't really worry me at all. So, yeah, pitching-wise, I feel a lot better. And then prospect-wise, the talent that they already have in the system. Christian Campbell, I was listening to I can't remember the guy's name, but he's one of the guys who works on the list for Baseball America. He was on the Sox Prospects podcast. After you listen to us, give them a listen too. Great show. And he was saying that very, very good chance that Christian Campbell passes Marcelo Meyer, which imagine if I had told either of you that last year, like, hey guys, next September, we're going to be talking about Christian Campbell passing Marcelo Meyer. We'd probably all be like, oh my God, that's a disaster. Meyer must have fallen off a cliff. No. Meyer's doing fine. He has his injury issues, sure. Nothing crazy. But Christian Campbell, oh my God, what a season. He's flown up the minor league ranks way better than I think anyone could have imagined. He's also playing shortstop, second base, third base, center field, left field. He might have even played some right field. I'm not sure. He plays all around. Point being, the talent in the system is beyond tremendous right now. So I'm feeling a lot better in terms of pitching philosophy and the players that they already have in-house.
Sammy, did they say on Sox Prospects anything about where they think Campbell is going to settle in defensively? Obviously, like, would be super great if he's this versatile guy, but the reason I asked that is because it's pretty well documented the Red Sox need to get better from the right side of the plate for next season. Regardless of how far they take it this year, that's going to be an area of improvement, hopefully, for next year. And if Campbell can play a legitimate big league shortstop, then my head goes to the would they consider trading Meyer? But I don't know. Did they talk at all about where they think he's going to settle in defensively?
So they alluded, they didn't like pick a position for where he would play, but they said they could see him breaking camp as a second baseman because he's played a very good second base. Shortstop, he's kind of fringe average is the way they described it. So probably like a 40 or a 45 ranking if you're using the 20-80 prospect scale. And they also brought up that he could play third base, which he's done a little bit. I believe he started there last week. And spell Devers a few games, let him DH a bit, because we've seen him have injury issues and it's affected him on the field and, you know, hitting. So basically the biggest takeaway was that Christian Campbell can play a handful of positions. He's not elite at any of them, but he's average to slightly above average at all of them, which is just like, that's so Alex Cora. It's a very Alex Cora kind of player.
Yeah, I mean, having him and Sidon in the lineup as everyday guys who you can move around based off of pinch hitters and stuff. And obviously, I hope that next year you have more guys that you want in the lineup every day, and so there'll be a little bit less pinch hitting, which I think would benefit you. I think one thing we've learned this year watching all the pinch hitting is it's great if you could have it so that Romy Gonzalez and Rob Refsnyder faced every single lefty that pitched, and you know, Willie Abreu and Yoshida would face every righty that pitched, you'd be thrilled. But it's not that simple, because you pinch hit in the sixth inning with Romy and Refsnyder, and then all of a sudden, like, the closer's out there in the ninth and he's a right-hander and he's blowing those guys away. Obviously, it's better if maybe you have like one platoon in the lineup, but also having those guys there.
Yeah, I agree. It's certainly it's a luxury. One more thing I want to add on the Sox Prospects podcast that we listened to earlier. The guest they had, the Baseball America guy, he hypothesized that he wouldn't be shocked if Christian Campbell broke camp with the Red Sox. He said more likely than Roman Anthony even. So take that for what it's worth, how far this kid has come. And I don't know, the swing, like, you look at his swing. We've all watched baseball for a long time, especially me because I'm elderly. We've all watched baseball. You look at his swing and you're like, oh God, that's a lot of violence going on. But it's been proven successful at every single level in a big way too. It's not like he's just getting by. He's dominating. So
And he's hitting velocity.
Yeah, he's hitting velocity. You can just go on, and he's hitting the ball to the opposite field. He's pulling the ball. He's doing everything. So you can just go on and on about this talent. You have Roman Anthony, who looks to be the real deal. He's literally the best prospect in baseball as we speak. Plus power, very good contact, even plays some solid defense and can run a teeny bit. Then you got Campbell, Meyer. Teal is catching fire now. He was ice cold for his first 50 at-bats or so in AAA. Now he's hitting. It's just like, it's such a good spot to be in. I wish that they had supplemented a little bit more at the major league level so we could be talking about the now a little bit more. But I'm still excited about the future. There's a lot to look forward to.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the major league level here, because I mean, I think we're all so excited for these guys. And like, obviously there's the questions of who of these four is going to break camp with the Red Sox next year. And maybe your answer to that could impact your answer to what I'm going to ask you here. But Chris Cotillo in Mass Live wrote an article about Tyler O'Neill today, where basically he's talking about, you know, he's an upcoming free agent. He's had a really good season when on the field, but obviously he's had he said three different, I don't know if they all resulted in, I think he has had three separate IL stints, one for a knee, one for the leg infection, one for the concussion early in the season. But when he's been on, I mean, he literally just hit his 30th homer, and getting to 30 homers despite three IL stints is crazy impressive. His OPS is approaching 900, but Chris Cotillo talked to, I believe he referred to him as an evaluator, major league evaluator, or some front office executive or something, that said he thinks that O'Neill on the open market would get like 3 years, $36 million, but it's hard to predict, and that he thinks that the qualifying offer might be a little too rich for Tyler O'Neill, and that maybe the Red Sox will not offer it. We've had the discussion, but we had it a while ago.
Wait, too rich in what way? Like,
As in the Red Sox.
It's gonna be 18-19 million.
It's gonna be 21 million for the qualifying offer, but basically Cotillo's saying that he doesn't think that O'Neill is worth that much and the Red Sox shouldn't offer it. That if they did offer it, he'd probably accept it. And so yeah, that's where I stand. I would do it. I would offer him I would actually be really disappointed if they didn't offer him the qualifying offer. If anything, because of how obvious it is that the Red Sox need not only power, but right-handed power. Like, he's such a good fit for this team, so long as they can get him those DH at-bats. I know they've got outfielders galore. And obviously, you know, bringing him back, I think, is kind of contingent on trading Yoshida. But even if you don't, like, you're going to need right-handed bat, a productive right-handed bat from somewhere. One-year deal, like, I get it's a little expensive, but, like, my God, he's been good for you. And the fit has been good.
Yeah, well, let's think about it. You're probably going to move an outfielder. I think the only two options are Duran and Abreu. Duran, you'll probably get a better return for, but you lose a better player. Abreu has more team control, but you're probably not going to get as good of a return for him. But you'll get a good return for either. Point being, one of those lefties is probably going to go. Then you have Sedan in center. One of those two guys that I just mentioned in the corner outfield. And then it's kind of like, what do you do from there? When does Roman Anthony come up? How much run does Rob Refsnyder get? Is he even coming back? Like,
would you be comfortable with Roman Anthony on opening day?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be comfortable with. I don't know if they're going to do it because he's so young and
right. Two hasn't separate had questions.
That
yeah.
many, but it's like it's weird because you see some guys, like you see Rafael Devers just clicks right away, but then you see Jackson Holliday, who was also the number one prospect in baseball. And he has not looked good at the major league level aside from a very brief hot streak. So
he made that this is such a brutal error in the last game.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank you, Jackson Holliday. But it's kind of a lame answer. But when you have a team like the Red Sox that's been so consistently good at developing these bats, and not only that, calling them up at the right time too. Think about like Benintendi. I just mentioned Devers. They're good at Bogarts too. And it was a while back, but I trust the Red Sox with this. It's the opposite of pitching. With pitching, every move they make, the hairs on my arm stand up. I'm a little bit anxious. But when it comes to hitting, I'm like, these guys are a well-oiled machine. So I think they'll make the right choice with Roman Anthony. I don't think he'll start the season in Major League Baseball. But if he did, I think he'd do just fine.
Pat, let me ask you a question here. Because, Sammy, you make a great point. the Red Sox churn out offensive talent like it's nothing, and they've done it for years. So I'm going to give you two options, and you tell me what you'd rather the Red Sox do. Tyler O'Neill on the qualifying offer, we'll call it 1 year, $21 million, or Tyler O'Neill, you don't offer him the QO, but you re-sign him for 3 years and $36 million. What makes you more comfortable?
QO, pretty comfortably. And I say that just because, and I think the QO in terms of like the whole too rich thing, whatever, I get it, injury concerns. My point A, guy's been a monster. Guy's been nothing short of great when he's been on the field this year. Second off, look at what the Dodgers just paid for Teoscar Hernandez for 1 year. If you let Tyler on, and I'm completely doing a 180. 2 weeks ago, we talked about this. I didn't want to do this. If you offer Tyler O'Neill the QO for $21 million for 1 year, let's say he picks it up. Perfect. You have your right-handed power bat. If Campbell comes up, you have two ideally really good right-handed bats. If you let him walk and you're on the hunt for a right-handed bat and you don't go big fish hunting, if you don't go big fish hunting for a Pete Alonso or someone like that, it's Kyle Schwarber all over again. You're fucked. You're so, so fucked.
Pat, when I brought this up on Twitter, I made my feelings known, like I want them to QO O'Neill. And someone commented, I would rather they make another run at Teoscar. Here's the issue. You had your chance at that. He's going to get the QO himself with the Dodgers. And I don't know if I agree with this, but I remember around the trade deadline time, maybe a little bit before or after, Robert Murray of FanSided had said that he thinks that Teoscar Hernandez is going to get $100+ million. I don't know if he's getting that, but I'm just saying, like, to get an impact right-handed bat, you're either going to have to trade legit prospect. Like, you're not going to run into a Tyler O'Neill trade where you traded literally fucking nothing for the guy. You're not going to run into that every year. So if you let Tyler O'Neill go without the QO and he signs a multi-year deal elsewhere, you're either paying big bucks for like a P. Alonso or Alex Bregman, who I have serious questions about both those guys long-term, or you're going to make a big trade for a different right-handed bat, or you're taking a serious downgrade.
Hold on. Challenge flag. Okay. This is the Teoscar comment. That is the most "the grass is greener" take I've ever heard. Look at the numbers. O'Neill clears him in every single category, and he's 2 years younger, and he's going to cost less. Fuck no, dude. Teoscar, get out of here. I wanted Teoscar before the season. I think that would have been a nice ad, but I wanted both of them. I'm not, if I have to choose right now for 1 year, well, actually, irrelevant. You're not going to get Teoscar for 1 year. So no way. That's the most, again, grass isn't always greener.
Let me ask you. Tyler O'Neill, 1 year, $21 million, or Teoscar, I'll say 4 years, $80 million.
No way.
I'll make it even easier. Tyler O'Neill, 1 year, 21, or Teoscar, 3 years, 50.
No,
it's still
no,
Tyler.
I don't want Teoscar. I do not want Teoscar. He's a good player. He's going to require multiple years. The Red Sox are a very young team. I hate this, but they need the roster flexibility. I like O'Neill on a 1 year deal. I don't care if you have to overpay a little bit. I hate that we even have to talk about this because it's the fucking Boston Red Sox. And they should say, we need a right handed bat. Let's go get a right handed bat. Fenway Sports Group will still make a boatload of money. It doesn't matter if we overspend a little bit. We are so rich.
I think the other thing, too, the other component here is if you do lock up, I would not sign Tyler O'Neill to a multi year extension. I would not. I wouldn't do it. The perfect thing, like there is a perfect window here where you give Tyler O'Neill the qualifying offer. He accepts that. That is your 1 year grace period to see how Campbell and Roman adjust to the big leagues. That window, God forbid, please, Roman has a Jackson Holliday level of struggle and he has to go down. He's not a right-handed bat, but he's a bat that was probably going to be a big part of your lineup that just did not pan out. That being said, Tyler O'Neill in a 1 year deal lets Roman get his footing. You see if he's ready when he comes up. He will be up next year. I'm with Sammy. I don't think he breaks camp. But at the same time with the new CBA, if he wins Rookie of the Year and they don't manipulate the service time, they get an extra first-round pick. So I wouldn't put it past him. But a year of a valuable right-handed bat in Tyler O'Neill, who has shown you he can play at Fenway, while these younger guys, like your right-handed bat in Campbell and your starting corner outfielder in Roman, get adjusted to the big leagues, that is massive. Massive, massive, massive. And if not, you're putting all your eggs in the Roman basket when he comes up, and that is horrifying. Not that I don't think he can do it, but that's a lot of pressure on a 20-year-old kid.
Pat, where I thought you were going here, what the Red Sox offensively, in terms of moves they're going to make, because obviously you're going to bring up the prospects, and three out of the big four are left-handed hitters, and Campbell's the one righty. What the Red Sox need to be trying to figure out, obviously they have a lot to figure out pitching-wise, but offense-wise, they need to figure out who is the best goddamn right-handed bat that we can fit in the middle of our order, because they're not going to get to that next level offensively where they're crushing both right-handers and left-handers every day. Formidable lineup that's not going to be streaky based off of who you're facing, what relievers they have, do they have dominant lefties. You got to figure out how you're going to get the best goddamn right-handed hitter you can in that lineup. To me, I've said it a million times before, it's Vlad Jr., and Vlad Jr. is a free agent after next year. I don't know if they're going to be willing to pay that kind of money. I don't know if John Henry's about that life anymore, but if he is, the perfect bridge to Vlad Jr., because the Jays were not, Pat, get out of here with that. The Jays were not willing to trade him at the deadline, so I would not anticipate them being willing to trade him in the offseason. But you get Tyler O'Neill on a one-year deal. He's your DH next year. He walks after a year. You go balls to the wall for Vlad Jr. A young, controllable, or not control, a young, he's the perfect
type of
bat. He's thick. Okay, he's thick.
He looks like a Bruins defenseman.
And he's perfect for Fenway. And I know, Sammy, I know you hate when
he is. That's fair.
But he crushes Fenway. And it's not just because of the pitchers the Red Sox have thrown out there. It's perfect for him. And he hates the Yankees. And he's young. And he hits for power. And he hits for everything. He hits for average power. He's basically the perfect hitter. You get that guy in the lineup with Devers. We talk about Judge and Soto. Devers and Vlad is the Judge and Soto of tomorrow if they can make it happen. And the way you can bridge to that is by finding a really good right-handed hitter on a one-year deal. The only way I see you doing that is by retaining O'Neill on that qualifying offer.
Pat.
Pat gave me for those listening, Pat gave me the thumbs down as I was saying that.
Yeah. Pat's thumbs down. Pat, be real with me. If the Red Sox got Vlad Jr., would you not be hyped, like going nuts? Because I was.
Dude, he would be.
I don't even think it makes that much sense.
That's
in the grand scheme of things,
I
would lose my fucking mind if they got Vlad Jr.
I'm not calling Vlad Jr. a bad player. I'm not saying I wouldn't be happy if he was a Red Sox. I would love that. I would be thrilled. From a roster construction standpoint, that is a fucking mess.
Who cares? You can hit your way out of it.
Are you saying that just because of the Devers? Are you saying that just because of the Devers defense and
I'm saying if
Yoshida's gone, it's not a mess at all. Yoshida's gone. You rotate Vlad in at first in DH. Costas gets his days off. Costas has had some injury things, get some days off his feet. Vlad can play first. He can back you up at third. Hopefully not, but he can if you need him to. It's not that bad.
Pat?
I don't know. My point just being, I know, Gordo, my point just being, Vlad's going to get his 10, 12-year contract. And if he gets a 10-year contract next year, him and Rafi will both have 10 years on that contract. And 4 years into that, they're both going to be DH profiles. That's scary. That's scary to me.
It's a good point. It's a good point.
That's horrifying to me.
It's a good point. You know what might happen that nobody's talking about? And like, we'll do a full episode on this. I would be shocked, but I don't think it's out of the question that Costas gets moved. Nobody's even mentioned that. Crazy? No.
I thought that's where you're going with that, Sammy. I don't think that's that crazy. I think it's crazy. I think it's crazy. If they got Vlad, I don't think it's that crazy.
Okay. I don't want it to happen, to be clear. Costas is like one of my favorite baseball players in the world right now, but it's just not not that crazy when you think of, I mean, we've been talking about them maybe moving Durant. Durant's been one of the best players in the world all year long. Kostas, you'd be banking on a team paying for his potential because he's coming off a down year. So I don't know. I don't think it'll happen. I just don't think it's that crazy.
I don't think it would happen now, but I don't think it's crazy to think that if they, and like literally the only scenario where I would think they would do that is if they got Vlad, like literally Vlad Jr. specifically, I guess maybe if they got Pete Alonso, it would be the same thing, but it's like, yeah, when Kostas has like 2 or 3 years left, then you move him, which would be like a year after they got Vlad in that scenario, or 2 years after they got Alonso in that scenario. It's years down the line, but yeah, I mean, it could only in that scenario to me though. But all of this is centered around, should the Red Sox give Tyler O'Neill that qualifying offer? I'll give you one last stat and then we got to go to a series preview. At bats per homer, league leader in at bats per home run is obviously Aaron Judge, 10 at bats per home run. Second is Ohtani with 12.3 at bats per home run. Third, Anthony Santander with 13.5 at bats per home run. Fourth, Brent Rooker with 13.6 at bats per home run. Oh, actually, that it has him fifth here. Actually, he has the third best at bats per home run in baseball. It's Tyler O'Neill with 12.7 at bats per home run. So actually, I don't know why Baseball Reference has him fifth, but he's actually just behind Judge and Ohtani in at bats per home run. Obviously, availability is one of the most important things, and Tyler O'Neill has shown year over year that he's not going to be out there for 150 plus games, 140 plus games. But that's a dude who, when he's in the lineup, he's a factor.
You kind of got to assume he's going to play when you look at the whole season, 2 out of every 3 games. Like, you're going to get 100-ish games out of him. He just surpassed 100 this year, and I think it's his second highest total ever. So if you average all those out, I'm sure you'll probably get. Actually, I could probably tell you he's averaging. No, I can't. Hold on. Nope, it doesn't tell you. Anyway.
Well, in any case, what better team to withstand Tyler O'Neill's potential absences than the Red Sox, who are going to have 4 prospects ready to go who all have AAA experience now, ready to come up as soon as he potentially gets hurt. Like, there's no better team to withstand Tyler O'Neill's injuries than the Boston Red Sox. I would be disappointed if they did not give him the qualifying offer, but let's get to the series preview because we got to get to that. Yankees, correct me, they won this game, right?
We got to crown an MVP first.
Series MVP. You're right. Is it Tyler O'Neill?
It's the man of the hour. It's Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah. By the way, so unfair to have this Tyler O'Neill conversation just minutes after he sent us all into a tizzy with this walk-off home run that he sent to the moon. But
3 home runs, I think we're complimenting him.
No, you're right. We're complimenting. But we have to have hard conversations about him, and I don't like that.
Sad. It's true. But we definitely, I think, as a collective group here, feel higher about him than others. Like, I'm serious when I say that, like, there's a lot of people out there that don't think that they should extend the qualifying offer. And I still haven't heard what those people think they should do to get a right-handed bat to replace him if they don't do it. But I'm just saying, we are high on Tyler O'Neill. We want Tyler O'Neill here on this podcast.
You know, it's a weird thing. You guys have both heard Tyler O'Neill talk, right?
Yeah.
Bruh.
Can you imagine him yelling?
Bruh.
Like, what does he sound like when he yells?
Bruh. Do that again, Pat.
Bruh.
Yeah, kind of like that.
I can't imagine. Like, I hear...
He definitely just sounds like He-Man.
Yeah. When Raffy talks, I can imagine him going up an octave and yelling. But Tyler O'Neill, I'm like, can he get higher than this?
He kind of talks from like the back of his throat, if that makes sense, right?
He talks from his chest. Here. Yeah, he's like muscling the words out every time he talks. It's like a workout.
But yeah, Tyler O'Neill, please.
All right, keep serious preview. Sorry, I had to bring up that I can't fathom him yelling, but I'm sure he does.
All right, Yankees, Sox, Yankees, 4-game series coming up. The Yankees are 84-62. They are 5-5 this month. They just finished off a game with the Kansas City Royals where Jazz Chisholm walked them off. Red Sox are 5-4 versus the Yankees this year, and here's the matchups. First game, Cooper Criswell versus Nestor Cortes. who just threw 4 1/3 perfect innings out of the pen his last time out there. He has thrown 10 2/3 innings against the Red Sox this year with 5 earned runs. He is a left-hander. Second game, Red Sox starter TBD. If he can pitch, it will be Tanner Houck. If he cannot, it will be Richard Fitz. He's going against Clark Schmidt, who has a 2.34 ERA this year. He's only thrown one outing since his from a long stint, but it was 4 2/3 scoreless in that outing. Third game, Brian Bayo versus Gerrit Cole, who recently dropped an awesome quote about how Rafi Devers owns him. However, Gerrit Cole has allowed 3 runs or less in 9 of his last 10, and he has a 1.58 ERA since August 1st. So Gerrit Cole, after a tough start, has really turned things around. Fourth game, Cutter Crawford versus Carlos Rodon. Rodon hasn't struck out less than 5 in a start since July 21st. If you look at his game logs, it's kind of either dominant or just okay since that point, since that mid to end of July mark. Overall, good numbers, and obviously he's a lefty. Offense-wise, last time we were talking about the Yankees on this podcast, it was just Judge and Soto, and like literally that was it. And they are still like obviously the dominating forces in that lineup, but this is definitely a deeper lineup than the last time we saw him. Aaron Judge has 51 homers and an 1141 OPS. Juan Soto has 38 homers and a 990 OPS. Both far and away lead the Red Sox in both those categories. However, Judge has an OPS of 548 without a home run in his last 12 games. At least that was entering the last game in the series. He has not homered since that Paw Patrol video came out where he like talked about swinging too hard and whatnot and cartoon Aaron Judge, all that. Jazz Chisholm has a 910 OPS in 31 games since being acquired. Austin Wells, 843 OPS in his last 20 games. Gleyber Torres, an 812 OPS in his last 25 games. And they now have Jason Dominguez up there as well because Alex Verdugo absolutely sucks. He's got a 650 OPS on. So definitely a deeper lineup than we saw. The Yankees are a better team today than when we saw them, a very flawed version of the Yankees the last few times that these two teams faced off. But as I said, they're 5-5 this month, so it's not like they're unbeatable here. It is a 4-game series. Joe, let's hear what we got from a standings perspective. How many of us had 2 out of 3 in this series? Did any?
Let me take a look. Nobody! Nobody had 2 out of 3.
Sammy, did you predict a sweep?
Yeah, I thought the Red Sox were going to sweep. I was like,
close. We were close.
Yeah, Sammy went for the sweep. The rest of us predicted 1 out of 3.
He's the only one who had them winning the series.
Yes. Yes. So standings stay the same. Sammy was 16, Pat 13, me 10, Gordo 9.
So this is my opportunity to get 2 points in the series and jump you, Joe, because a 4-gamer.
Well, if you get that sequence right, and let's see.
And as we know, I'm incredibly successful with
yeah, let's
I am so good at this shit.
Let's have you go first then. I will go first.
I'm going to say the Red Sox are going to win 1 out of 4. They're going to win the first game and lose the next 3. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Brutal.
I literally have them winning the Criswell game, but that's just where I'm at with this. I'm impressed that they're at this point, but yeah, I'm still waiting for that death blow series. I think it could be this one.
Criswell matches up pretty well against the Yankees. Yankees hit like, I don't know, that big looping slider. I feel like he's going to get a lot of guys to roll over. I don't know. Anyway, want me to go?
I do. Let's hear what's actually going to happen because you're number one. Joe, how many is he in front by right now?
By 3 over Pat.
Well, it's not that much.
Okay, yes. Ooh, right. Tell me what's going to happen.
I think they're going to win the Nestor game and then win the Cole game. So I'm going to say split. What's that? Win, loss, win, loss?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I think. I think Clark Schmidt is a nightmare for the Red Sox. I know he's a righty, but he's a super cutter heavy guy. He throws a ton of cutters, so I feel like that's going to be tough on all the lefties in the lineup. And then the Red Sox righties just don't hit right-handed pitching well, like Tyler O'Neill. Not great against righties. Who am I forgetting? Connor Wong, I guess, is fine, but yeah, I just Sedan. Don't think... Yeah, Sedan, yeah. No, I don't think they're going to find much success against Clark Schmidt. And who's pitching the fourth game? It's
Cutter versus Rodon.
Rodon, yeah, that's tough, dude. That's tough. Cutter at Yankee Stadium. Ooh. So, yeah, actually fairly confident about this prediction. I'm saying split. Win, loss, win, loss. And by the way, 4-game series, so your order of operations does matter.
All right, Pat, are you going to What are you going to do here? Because you could actually, if you predict the right order of operation and don't pick the split, you could get within a game or within a point of Sammy here.
I know. And I'm struggling because in my head I have the same order as Sammy. But we're to the point where you got to be big, you got to be bold, you got to be brave. I'm going on a limb here. I think they win 2 out of 4, but I think the order of operations is loss, win, win, loss. I think Criswell will be okay. I think Nestor has a fire under his ass right now after getting pulled out of the rotation. I think they'll drop that game. They're going to beat Cole's ass like always. I think they'll beat Clark Schmidt. and then the fourth game, I mean, Cutter at Yankee Stadium.
He was great last time.
That's like letting Barry Bonds hit in a Little League field. And I love Cutter. Cutter's a nice guy. But I think there's no shot in hell they win that game. So I'm going Pat, loss, win, win, loss.
He had that, what was it, like, what did he do, like, 7 scoreless on, like, 60 pitches or something last time there?
Yeah, yeah.
But obviously you can't count on that again, but that was sick. That was fun.
It was a good game.
All right, Joe, what are you, come on, Joe, predict the sweep. Do it.
I'll tell you what, I'm not going to go sweep, but I'm going to go 3 out of 4. I just feel like something about the Yankees just makes you feel good. It makes you wake up a little bit. And hopefully these guys wake up for a little bit. So I think the loss is going to come in the first game. I think it's going to be the first game they lose, and then they're going to win Friday. If it's Hauker, if it's Fitz, I don't care. I feel good about it. I feel good about this offense against Gerrit Cole. And then I feel good about Cutter helping out the Sunday Sox. Get that mojo back on Sundays.
Sunday Sox, I forgot. They're like fully dead and gone.
Oh yeah, that's Gonzo. That's Gonzo. But Joe, I like that because you picked the anti me, which is smart. Because he's like, Gordo stinks at this. Gordo predict win, loss, loss, loss. So I'm gonna go loss, win, win, win. You can't lose with that strategy, Joe.
Do we all have different we all have different orders? I like that. Yeah, I like
beauty of a four gamer.
Hey, yeah. That's what they say.
All right, Pat, move us forward. What's going on?
Well, guys, it's time for none other than Crystal Bomb.
Bomb it. You actually did a good job there. That kind of sounded Thank you. Pat's talking into a Nintendo DS this episode. But yeah. That sounded pretty good.
And Mike's still busted.
But you sound like you're like, it sounds like we're all having a conversation, but you're like sitting on the other side of the room.
Yeah. It'll be fixed next episode, I hope. All right. Crystal Bomb time. Joe, quick score update.
Gladly, because only one person got a point, and it's the guy who even on his honeymoon is able to make a pick right. And Gordo had Tyler O'Neill. Obviously, O'Neill crushed it. Sammy used his Raffy pick. Pat went with Casas, and I went with Durant. So it's not a runaway just yet for Sammy. He's got 22. Gordo's got 19. Pat's got 9, and then it's me with 6.
Okay. I'm going with Raffy. I'm taking Raffy Devers. I'm going with Raffy Devers.
I know it's not. It's frowned upon to do it. I'm doubling up with you, Pat. Sorry, Sammy. I'm going with Raffy. He's going to hit a homer. I need my points. I'm doubling up.
Extra point if he hits it off Gerrit Cole.
You only get half a point if it's off a Cole. It's too easy.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
I'm going to go. Okay. This is tough.
And you know what? Why you think, Sammy? It's not bold anymore. Raffy hasn't hit a homer since, I believe, August 25th.
It's been like 2 weeks.
It's been like two weeks.
He's not right, man. He watches at-bats. He's not right. Something's up. I think his shoulder is still messed up. He looks so off. Like that at-bat he had, and I'm sorry to backtrack and go back to the series, but that at-bat he had, I think it was the 9th inning, where he just struck out on 3 pitches. That was not Rafael Devers.
There's been a lot of those.
Okay, I'm going to go with Yoshida. I think he has been seeing the ball better lately, the last like 2-3 games. He's starting to click again. He had a little bit of a cold stretch after his scorching hot stretch. So I know they're facing 2 lefties, but I'm going to hope Yoshida gets it done in either game two or three against the Riders. Short prayers porch, up.
Short porch.
Short porch. And if you remember, he hit a home run this year at Yankee Stadium, and it was quite a big one. Shout out to, what, Clay Holmes?
Clay Holmes. Yeah. Loser.
Bum ass.
Guy who's no longer a closer. They're going closer by committee now.
Are they really?
Yeah.
That's what I heard.
Oh, they're so fucking cooked. I love it. All right.
Joe, what fellas, do you got, Joe?
This is ideal. This Danny is ideal Jackson. For me.
Danny.
Yankee Stadium.
Oh, you're going to pick Sedan.
Hell yeah, brother. Yeah, hell yeah, I'm going coming. With Sedan.
Let's go.
This is ideal for him. He's one of the three Yankee killers on this roster. How does he not hit a homer at Yankee Stadium against those?
Who do you have as the third? It's Rafi, Sedan, and who?
Yoshida. I'm adding him to the list after that game.
I guess you can count him. I will allow it. I will allow it. I like it. Sedan is a baby Yankee murderer. I like it. I very much believe in that. All right. Just one more segment. Who? Sammy?
Sorry, I was just laughing. Sedan's a baby Yankee murderer.
Okay. Yeah.
No, it was Sammy. That came out like he's murdering children.
Yeah, I thought, I just imagined, like, okay. Anyway. All right.
John Wayne Raffaella.
It's guys being dudes. Your favorite segment. Nobody's getting murdered here. We're just talking ball. This week, we need a player who did the dirtiest thing you can possibly do, and I'm talking real dirty, and that's playing for both the Red Sox and the Yankees. No repeats. I'm not even going to try to remember the guys we've already picked. We're going to be really digging the bottom of the barrel here, so who would like to start us off?
I can go.
I can do it.
Oh, go, Gordon.
Well, shit. You got it.
No. All right. Go.
I'm going to go, and I'm going to take our buddy old pal, Koopa Loop, Garrett Cooper, who played 13 games for the Yankees before being traded. I believe he was for Michael King. Do I have that right? Garrett Cooper was in that trade for Michael King, I believe.
You're the trade guy. I'm the number guy.
There's two trades, and I get them mixed up. But I think Garrett Cooper was Michael King, who was dealt in the Juan Soto trade, of course. He was not... Well, he was okay for the Yankees in 13 games. He was not good for the Red Sox in 24 games. He had a 455 OPS. Currently on a minor league deal with the Orioles, has a 1007 OPS in 15 games, but he got placed on the injured list on July 26th and hasn't returned. Garrett Cooper, super nice to us. Wish he could have been a little bit more successful on the field here because the Red Sox could have used the right-handed bat. Obviously, Dom Smith won that job, and damn, we miss Dom Smith too. Any excuse to talk about Dom Smith? Joe Braverman has verified that it was in the Michael King trade. So, goddamn, basically Garrett Cooper for Juan Soto if you put two and two together. So, yeah, Garrett Cooper, Red Sox and Yankees legend, despite playing 37 combined games for the two teams.
I like it.
All right. I'm going to string you guys along a little bit because I want to see if you guys can guess it. This Steven guy... Moore. What?
Steven Drew.
No. Oh, my God, no. All right. He made a full season's worth of turns in the Red Sox rotation. He was tied for second on the staff in game started. This is a post-2018 player.
A full season's worth of turns.
Only one?
One season with the Red Sox. Made a full... workload, like a full season's worth of starts.
A starting pitcher?
Is this like a trick question with 2020? I think it is. It's not Zach Godley.
No.
He didn't pitch for the Yankees.
Oh, God. I don't know. It's going to be one of those. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Oh, you got it. It's Chris Mazza.
Oh.
How many starts did he make for the Red Sox?
Nine.
What? He started nine games?
He had to have been an opener.
Sorry, started six.
I still can't believe that. But how many innings did he pitch in those nine games?
So, six. first on the staff that year in starts was Martin Perez, 12 starts. Eovaldi had some health stuff that year. He pitched and started 9 games. Chris Mazza pitched in 9 games, started 6. He had 9 games, 30 innings, a 4.8 ERA, a measly 101 ERA plus, and a whip of 1.6.
I just don't remember him starting games.
I think I remember like a singular outing from Chris Mazza. Dude, if you had told me that he made like 2 starts, I wouldn't have believed it.
22.
No, I wouldn't have bought that.
He
started any games, to be honest.
This one's tough. I might have gotten this one wrong. 22. Nope, got it right.
You're a monster, dude.
Yeah. That's easy, actually, because ZZ looks like 22. So my idiot brain was just like, oh, yeah, ZZ, M-A-Z-Z-A, 22. Come on, guys. You don't think like this?
Nope.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, I'm insane. That's a good one. All right. I have kind of a disturbing one. I actually didn't know this about this gentleman. Louis Tiant actually played for the Yankees. I feel like most people know that. I feel like most people have to know that. I was kind of disappointed in myself for not knowing that, but obviously much better known as a Red Sox stud. The Red Sox, he pitched 274 games, 1,774.2 innings with a 3.36 ERA and 118 ERA plus over 8 seasons. Louis Tiant, friggin' awesome. See him around Fenway still. And then with the Yankees, not as good. 2 seasons, 55 games. Not terrible. 4.31 ERA, an ERA plus of 93. So he was below average, but not terrible. But yeah, anyway, some disturbing news if you didn't already know that Louis Tiant played for the Yankees, but obviously much better known as a Red Sox, an actual Red Sox legend. I feel like you can legitimately use that term for him. He's one of those like...
Sammy, what year did he pitch for the Yankees?
He pitched for the Yankees in 79 and 80.
Did they have the facial hair rule back then? This is interesting. Look at this.
Oh, that's good question.
He's got the whole thing. The Yankees.
Mustache. You can do mustaches. I guess that counts as a
staff. But that's got to be pushing it. That's got to be pushing it.
Goose Gossage did that. Goose Gossage did the same thing.
Oh, good point.
Yeah, big goose. Yeah. But anyway, Louis Tiant, I don't like to think of him as a Yankee because he's not one, but he did play for them. He also played for like 3 other teams. Cleveland for 6 years, Minnesota for a year, Pittsburgh for a year, California Angels for a year. So he... You know, after his time in Boston, actually, a lot was early. So he started with Cleveland, then he goes to Minnesota, then he spends a lot of time in Boston, then the Yankees, then the Pirates, and the California Angels. He had a great career. Played for the Red Sox and Yankees. End of story.
Should be a Hall of Famer.
All right. I got a confession. I'm not proud of it. I done fucked up. I had the Rays on the brain. Chris Mazza did not pitch for the Yankees.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I was gonna say, I didn't know.
I'm totally not a guy being a dude right now. I feel awful about it. But I will go with another 2020, darling. Colton Brewer.
Oh, yeah. Sammy, Sammy. He pitched for the Yankees this year, right?
Last year, I think.
No, he was
last
Cubs. Year.
Cubs. I knew we saw him at Fenway. And weren't we with each other, Gordo? We were like,
yeah, we were. We were shocked. I was like leaving the game early to catch the Celtics, and I ran back to the seat to be like, look who's coming in.
54.
But hold on. What is.
Yeah.
If we're being dudes, what is Pat being right now?
That was just a guy being a guy. That wasn't that. Yeah, yeah, that was just a guy.
That was a man being a boy. And for that, I apologize. Oh. That's on me.
Jesus.
Guys being boys.
You know, big ups to you for coming forward and admitting. Honestly, Pat put in the chat, I have some bad news right when I started talking about Louis Tiant. And I was like, oh my God, don't tell me like he died and I missed it or something. I literally was so nervous because that wouldn't be the first time that's happened on this segment. I had that guy who was a cop who became a cop and then died. And then I felt terrible. So I was, okay. You scared me a little bit, Pat. If you heard me pause in the middle of my fucking
mouth, yeah. I was like, no, keep going. Like,
oh no, please don't. Not again. But
that's good.
I just squashed a bug with my glass. Well, on that note, thank you for tuning in to episode 128 of Play Tessie. Before you go about your day, remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, rate us 5 stars. Apple, Spotify, Odyssey app, wherever. 5 stars, subscribe. You heard it from me. Please do it. Helps us out so much, helps you out so much. Get the notifications, all the goodies that come with subscribing. As always, we're on YouTube on the WEI channel, on the Play Tessie playlist there. Can hit the thumbs up there. We really appreciate when you guys do that. As always, follow us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. For Sammy, for Pat, for Joe in the back, it's Gordo. We will be back in your ears with another one coming tomorrow. Enjoy the Sox-Yankees series. Days winding down in this season. Get a move on, win some games, and see what happens. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.